Welcome to Hey YA, from great new books to favorite classic reads, from news stories to the latest in on-screen adaptations, Hey YA is here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. Hey YA is a book riot podcast hosted by Erica Azzapetti and me, Tirza Price, and we are recording on November 18th. Hello, Erica.
Hey, Tirza, how are you?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well. It just got like cold for real, and I'm like rude.
Right.
I don't appreciate this 40 degree, well, more like 40 degrees, but still.
Oh my gosh. Well, it snowed on Monday.
Dang.
And it's actually been cold enough that it's kept the snow on the ground all week. So I think It's supposed to warm up a little bit next week for Thanksgiving. But otherwise, yeah, it's a wintry wonderland outside my window right now, which feels a little early, but I'm okay with it. I just got to bundle up.
I feel like it is a little early. I'm like, you can't snow before December 1st. Come on now.
It's funny because, like, you know, I remember from my childhood, like, oh my gosh, I'm going to sound like, well, in my day.
Back in my day.
Yeah, but, like, I remember in my childhood, we would get snow before December quite often, and it would stick around, but, you know, the planet's warming up.
That's
true. Snow
is
not guaranteed on Christmas anymore, so it feels weird because it's not been like this for so many years, but, yeah, it's getting chilly.
Yeah. Maybe I should be grateful.
Yeah.
That's not quite as warmed, despite the global warming. So, I take it back. I welcome the snow.
Well, we are going to be talking about so much fun snow, unexpected snow, random weather events, and other fun things in today's topic. But first, we wanted to share a little bit about the news of the week. Because we are recording this on November 18th, the other night was the National Book Awards Gala, where they announced the winners. And this year's winner for Young People's Literature was All My Rage by Sabaa Tahir, which you might recall a few weeks/months ago when I was like, I have my suspicions about who I think will win, but I won't say on air because if I'm wrong, I don't want that aired. But this was totally the book I thought would win. So yeah. I'm very pleased for this book and for Sabaa Tahir. And yes, I'm very, very pleased with this announcement.
Yes. I have to consult you when I want to gamble in the future. Like, cheers.
My only talents are like predicting like ALA award winners and the National Book Award winners,
yeah.
Which, you know, is a very probably small game to be playing. But
listen, in our circles, it might be the one to be played. I still haven't read this one. It sounds really good, though.
Yeah. I just, you know, in knowing that, like, she had been working on this book for years, and it's semi-autobiographical, like, I'm just so happy for her. So,
yeah. I thought it was a nonfiction, actually.
Oh, yeah.
But it's about Misbah, who is newly married to Tafiq in an arranged marriage. Their life gets shaken by tragedy, then they go to the United States. And then there's Salahuddin and Noor, who are like best friends, like family. So I think it has like a lot of moving pieces about immigration. And basically it's about four Pakistani immigrants in the United States and their lives and everything that unfolds.
Yeah. And it's intergenerational,
yes,
too, which I always really like, especially in YA fiction.
Yeah. So it sounds really good. And
yeah.
That's getting bumped up on the TBR.
I'm excited for that. And the finalists, I have to say, were really excellent. You know, I love me some Lesbiana's Guide to Catholic School.
Yes.
That was a finalist. I love that book so much. Victory Stand, which is a YA nonfiction graphic memoir, was also a finalist.
Mm-hmm.
And why am I blanking on the other ones? Like, there were...
Was there one that I had really liked? 1,000 Steps in the Night or something?
That was on the long list.
Well, long list. Oh, okay, boo.
Yeah.
I still liked it.
Yeah, but like there were some just really good books on this list, so...
Yeah, I don't envy the, like, judges and stuff having to choose.
Oh my gosh. It must be impossible.
Yeah. Like, seriously.
Yeah. So that's the winner. So definitely pick it up and enjoy. And we are going to get to our topic at hand. First, let's hear from our first sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us. When the life Soledad Barnes built with the man who was supposed to be her forever goes poof in a cloud of betrayal and disillusion, there is no time to pout or sulk or even grieve the life she lost. But then an unlikely man enters the picture. He's the forbidden one, the one she shouldn't want but can't seem to resist. Y'all know how that goes. But Soledad's lost it all before and refuses to repeat her mistakes. She asks herself, can she trust him? Can she trust herself? From the ashes of a life burned to the ground, something bold and new can rise. So This Could Be Us is an instant New York Times and USA Today bestseller. It's been featured on the Today Show and CBS Mornings. And Kennedy Ryan is the first Black romance author to hit the New York Times adult bestseller list in almost 3 years, which is amazing. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge strategy and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, okay, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode.
All right, so today's topic is holiday reads. Yes. Which, yeah, we're excited about this. I'm personally excited because I think for like almost as long as I've been working for Book Riot, which is going on 7 years.
Ooh,
nice. I know. I've been with them for a long time now. Every single time the holidays comes around, I'm always like, okay, holiday reads. And, you know, I'm into YA. So I'm always like, what are the YA holiday reads? And like over the years, there have been some really good holiday themed, and like when I say holiday themed, let me just be real, Christmas themed YA books. And I mean, it's really exciting. I love them. I celebrate Christmas, so obviously that's totally my bag. But also, like, wow, the books tend to be really white, mm-hmm. which is bizarre because it's not like Christianity is a white religion. So why is this? And then also just like very focused on Christmas, which that is not so surprising either, because our entire society seems to like forget that like people celebrate other holidays this time of year too. So, but like this is the first year where I'm looking around and I'm like, oh my goodness, we actually have a few options that are like non-Christmas and a few books that are, you know, not written by white people. And mm-hmm. this seems like the first year where like I'm actually seeing progress on that front. So I'm not saying that it's great. We can all pack up and go home. Good job. We did our due diligence on diversifying YA, but like progress where progress has been made. Just wanted to acknowledge that. But like we, you know, need to keep going too.
Mm-hmm. No, that's definitely a good point. And it is curious because like I celebrate Christmas too, but there are other holidays, as you said, and a whole bunch of different people celebrate Christmas and are not just white. So it is interesting that what we've seen so far, but like you said, YA is leading, I think, just with my, you know, my observations, I feel like YA is leading the charge in terms of diversity and stuff. So
definitely,
I believe we will have a lot more in terms of different holidays celebrated and even like different perspectives, different experiences. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to it.
it's nice. And like, one thing that I think a lot of people tend to kind of get caught up in this trap of being like, oh, we'll just acknowledge Hanukkah as well. And like, while yes, inclusivity is important, one thing my Jewish friends have always said and reminded me mm-hmm. is that like Hanukkah is not as significant of a holiday to Judaism as like Christmas is to Christianity. Don't just like simply be like, oh, and Hanukkah is the Jewish version of Christmas. Like that's like, I feel like a lot of Christians tend to kind of make that assumption. Yeah. And I have a couple of Jewish friends who've just been like, nope, that's not true. Don't fall into that trap. So
I see.
I do have two books that are have Jewish protagonists and celebrate Hanukkah that I'm going to mention, but I'm just throwing that out there because that is something that I had to learn. So
I didn't know that. I've had Jewish friends and I need to call them up and ask them why they held out on me. No one told me. Why didn't anyone tell me? Yeah, but one of the books we have has Christmas is celebrated by most of the characters, but there are Jewish characters. There are also people celebrating Kwanzaa and there are Muslims and stuff like that. So
yes.
Yeah, so that's cool. But yes.
So maybe we should talk about our shared pick.
Yes. White Out by all of the Black YA authors that are JK. By Danielle Clayton, Tiffany D. Jackson, Nick Stone, Andy Thomas, Ashley Woodfolk, and Nicola Yoon.
Yeah. Which is quite the list. Like, and they also wrote Blackout, which came out last year, I believe, and it was like a big deal. And I believe that I've not read that one, but that one's set during a blackout in New York City.
Yeah.
Whiteout is set during a freak snowstorm in Atlanta.
Yes.
And so I love like the premises of just like, oh my gosh, disaster. And then they all obviously have huge casts of characters because you have six different authors writing these books.
Yeah, it's a huge cast of characters. I listened to the audiobook version. I believe you mentioned you had two.
Yes.
I didn't read ebook at all, so just audiobook, which is usually I read a mix of the two. But I liked how, with my ADHD, let me tell you, having a lot of characters in books can like be kind of hard for me to keep track of. Especially how I read, I like to, like, you know, pick it up and put it down as I have time. So, like, I'll be like, oh, who is this again? And what am I reading about? But I feel like with the audiobook, I liked how they had different narrators for different perspectives. It kind of helped me be like, oh, okay, this is this person.
Mm-hmm.
So the story centers around the relationship of Stevie and Sola, two teen girls who go to high school in Atlanta and plan to go to Howard University together. But it's also like kind of equally about their friends and their friends' love lives, I should say. But more on Stevie and Sola. The book starts out with Stevie explaining basically how she's really messed up with Sola. One way she messed up was by doing this experiment, because Stevie is this big brain genius level budding biochemist, I believe she wants to be. And you might be like, okay, like, why would an experiment be a problem for a relationship? But it's because she did an experiment on love, her goofy self. And basically, like, questioning the validity of love and the pursuit of love and, like, basically just reducing it to, like, the pursuit of dopamine and oxytocin or something like that, the cuddling hormone, whatever they're called. So that was part one of the mess up. Part two, I won't spoil because it was kind of something in the book I feel like the book was leading up to explaining.
Yeah.
So it was like a mysterious thing, like, oh, that time, Stevie's like, that time I messed up. I can't believe what I did. She'll never forgive me. And you're like, ooh, what will she never forgive? So it is a point of mystery and it's like, you know, getting to it, it's like, oh, okay. But it involves meeting Sola's family. So Stevie does some weird whatever during that time. So Stevie gets grounded, which means she can't apologize to Sola for what she did because her phone and laptop are taken away. Luckily, though, once her parents leave for last-minute Christmas shopping, she's able to bust her stuff out of the safe, and she naturally turns on her phone to find messages from Sola, one of which says that if Stevie doesn't apologize to her and her family by midnight, she never wants to see or speak to Stevie again. Thus, Stevie's big brain gets to work in, and she devises this grand plan to win Sola back. She calls friends and friends' family members and plots and schemes to execute this huge romantic gesture. And we see each person trying to complete their favor for Stevie during this weird, like, huge snowstorm in Atlanta. Which, of course, side note on that, Atlanta is obviously, if you read the book, nowhere near being prepared for, which really rings true. Just like you were talking about, like, small town stuff, Tirza, concerning, like, the weight of blood or whatever. I was actually born in Atlanta, although I was raised in Nashville. And let me tell you about southern cities and snow. If they get 1 inch, if that, it's shut down. Everything shut down. Pack it up, go home. Make sure you have bread and milk and toilet paper and water in case the lights go out, because we're going to die because it snowed 1 inch. So that's not an exaggeration, which is kind of funny. Having lived on the East Coast, it's kind of funny to me now. But anyway, so people are getting stranded at airports, at the mall, on the road. Suddenly, all these feelings that have been lying dormant are coming out. For instance, I mentioned this girl to you. She is clearly on my mind, living in my head rent-free. But there's one character whose life we delve into. There's this girl who's tasked with getting a poster to her uncle-in-law as part of Stevie's grand plan. And she's stuck at the airport waiting to be picked up. And she's with her ex-girlfriend. And the story basically goes into how she came to become more comfortable with the idea of liking girls, but also how she just couldn't tell her family, despite her uncle being married to a man and everyone being cool with it. So that's just an example of, like, with each character, it goes into their backstory and where they currently are with their love lives and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, if you enjoyed Let It Snow, which was the holiday book written by John Green, Maureen Johnson, and Lauren Miracle, and then, of course, it was made into a Netflix movie a couple of years ago, I think you will really like this book because it has, like, similar, you know, vibes of being united by a location. In this case, obviously, it's Atlanta and not, you know, a small town. Snowstorm. Lots of, like, expectations about love and second chances is a huge theme of this book. So there's a lot of fun stuff to enjoy about this. I actually went to Atlanta for the first time this year. And so I mean, I've only been to the city once and it was for a very short trip, but it was like, oh, I feel like these authors truly love the city. Yeah. And that really came through, I think, in the book.
Yeah, it definitely did. And I feel like I don't usually read contemporary YA romance for some reason. I think maybe because I like romance to be, like, kind of steamy. And I feel like that's inappropriate for YA. So just for me, I don't tend to gravitate towards it as much. But I think with this one, adding the holiday and the snow elements really made it feel kind of like more cozy and kind of like a hug in a book type of thing. I got that vibe at some point.
Yeah. And at the same time, too, like, this book takes place a few days before Christmas, but it doesn't feel like a Christmas book because I think the focus is not on holidays or expectations around the holidays, but about Stevie apologizing to Sola and her grand gesture and, you know, just trying to figure out their way back to each other. And then, like, all of the holiday stuff just happens to be set dressing. And so you also have characters who, like, yeah, you said, are celebrating a lot of different, you know, religions and celebrations. So, you know, Christmas is kind of the one that dominates, but it's not quite like, you know, I hesitate to be like, this is a Christmas book. Like, it sort of is, but it also doesn't necessarily read like a Christmas book, which is kind of nice for depending on how you want to go.
Yeah, it feels more like it feels more like it's just like a winter book, kind of, like, rather than a Christmas, because as you said, it has, you know, well, it just doesn't really super focus on it. And Maybe that's partially because our main character is...
I'm laughing
as I mention her.
Yeah, because she's a little annoying.
She's annoying.
And I say this with such love in my heart for her, because she's annoying in the type of way that I recognize that sometimes teenagers can be annoying because they really care about something, but like they're not always tactful about what they care about.
Yeah.
So Stevie is the type of person who, she's very smart. You know, she is kind of questioning her identity throughout this book. She uses she, her pronouns, but she's not comfortable with being like called a girl or being like sort of looped in with like other girls or being called Miss. So she's definitely exploring her identity at this point in time. And she doesn't really have all the answers. And that's not something that's ever really resolved or I think tackled head on in the book, which is fine because I don't necessarily think it had to be. It's just something that she's going through right now. And she's also the type of person where she's like, feels like she has to correct people to be more inclusive and like politically correct. And sometimes the way she does it, it's like, yeah, we all should be more mindful of our language. And sometimes the way she does it is like, okay, are you serious right now? Because like her family celebrates Christmas and her dad's like, I'm going to go Christmas shopping now. And she's like, you should say holiday shopping because, you know, not everybody celebrates Christmas. And it's like, well, okay, yeah, should we be, you know, more mindful of how, you know, the language that we use around the holidays because not everybody celebrates Christmas, of course. But also, your dad is going Christmas shopping. It's okay to say that because you guys celebrate Christmas. So I just kind of had to roll my eyes.
Her dad is literally a pastor.
Yeah.
He's celebrating Christmas and that's okay. That was a big eye roll for me too. I'm just like, oh my God.
But at the same time, it felt very realistic to her character. Yeah. So I was kind of like, oh, you sweet summer child.
You sweet, sweet angel baby. Yeah. So heads up for that. But again, like as you say, it's real. We've come across, as teenagers, we've come across fellow youths who were like that. And hopefully grew out of it.
And maybe some of us were like that.
And maybe some of us for a few minutes in our lives lacked it, like social tact. Maybe. Just maybe.
Just possibly.
Quite possibly.
It's a fun book if you like large casts of characters, if you like, you know, really, I think, distinct settings, if you like the idea of like second chance romance. It was very diverse. It was very like queer and like very, I mean, I think it was a pretty even split between like queer and non-queer relationships. So that was kind of fun to see. Usually when you have like a large cast romance, like you get used to like the one token queer romance, but in this book, there were multiple queer romances. So that was fun. Multiple queer couples. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm glad that I read it. And the cover is very like careful not to, I think, allude to holidays. It's like a really pretty snow globe. It doesn't even necessarily go with any like traditional holiday colors. So I think it could be a really good like general winter book, like you mentioned. But it's also, you know, if you want to read something cozy for the holidays, this is perfect too.
Yeah. And I think all the characters are Black, I believe, or the main characters. And with that said, they're all different types of characters and personalities. Like, no one felt like the same person.
Yeah.
You got the rocker, you got the, you know, socially awkward science lover, Stevie. You have the romantic, who's going to be a writer in the future. You have a rapper, you have other kids who were just kind of like, you know, figuring things out. Two girls that go to like a boarding school, I think it was, in New England or something.
Yep. So, yeah, Jewish characters, Muslim characters, Christian characters.
Exactly. Everybody.
They showed a really, I think, wide spectrum of like the Black experience. I mean, I'm saying this is a white person, so, but that, it just was like all the characters were very distinct, and that was really fun to read because, like you said, it's sometimes hard to balance a large cast of characters, and you can sometimes forget who's who or like not do a good enough job of distinguishing and well enough between them all. Exactly. But I thought that they all did a really good job of doing that. So
yeah, and this would be so good as a holiday movie or winter movie, whatever, because it's not super holiday focused, as we've been saying.
Netflix, come through, because this would be a great Netflix show.
This would be perfect.
Or TV, or movie, whatever.
It's giving, what's that one with Hugh Grant from like 20 years ago?
Oh, Love Actually.
Yes. I haven't seen that movie in a while, so I don't know if it's like actually problematic.
Or it's trash. It does not hold up.
It doesn't hold up? Oh, no.
No. Oh, gosh, no.
I haven't seen it in probably literally 20 years, but I remember it.
Erica, it's like really gross and fat phobic, and yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to break your heart.
No, it's fine.
I somewhat love it, but at the same time, it's bad.
That's why I said, I was like, wait a second. I remember like that coming on like literally like 20 years ago on the TV, and I'm like 10 or something, and being like, ooh, holiday movie. Whatever.
Right.
So I was, that's why I added that disclaimer, like, I haven't seen it in a long time. So I know these movies don't hold up.
I feel like a lot of millennials watched this at a young age and thought that it was really lovely and charming. Yes. And then we grew up and we watched it and we're like, all of these people need therapy. And they probably also all need to break up because this is terrible.
It's so ridiculous. Like looking back at that's a whole other episode, but looking back at things, like rewatching things, and it's like, oh, you're actually problematic, you're toxic, you need to go to therapy instead of being in a relationship. Like all the things you just said, and it's like, how did people think this was okay? Jesus Christ.
Yes. So if you want a not-so-problematic story that's romantic
with
and
a large cast.
Yeah, that serves that Love Actually vibe. I mean, there's even scenes that happen in an airport, you know.
That's what I was like. I remember a few snapshots from that movie. And I remember the main thing was like, it's a large cast and it's like holiday / winter. That's more so what I was going for.
Get White Out by Danielle Clayton, Tiffany D. Jackson, Nick Stone, Angie Thomas, Ashley Woodfolk, and Nicola Yoon. That was like a long breath that I just had to kind of exhale after saying all those names. But yeah, it's awesome.
But yes, we have a few more books to get into that we will get into right after we hear from some more sponsors.
Today's episode is brought to you by Steve Aoki's Hero Quest at your local bookstore or online at herquest.com, and catch Steve live on the Heavenly Hell Tour. Hero Quest is a graphic novel that is the story of a genetically augmented metahuman named Hero who travels into the multiverse 400 years into the future to save Earth from a disaster it cannot avoid. It has everything from mutants to robots to zombies to aliens, witches, and more. It's a quest for 10 rings of tremendous power from 10 different worlds that will be needed to save our world from certain disaster. It's an epic journey that will require the hero named Hero to be cursed to save the lives of billions on Earth. It's a story of heroism, wonder, betrayal, and finally, revelation. This is the hero's journey. This is Hero's quest. So the story was imagined by the mind of Steve Aoki and written by New York Times bestselling author Jim Kruger and Steve Aoki. So make sure to check it out. And this episode comes thanks again to Steve Aoki's Hero Quest at your local bookstore or online at herquest.com, and catch Steve live on the Heavenly Hell Tour.
Okay, Tirza. What other holiday / winter book is on your list, or are you interested in reading?
All right, so my next pick is Talk Santa to Me by Linda Urban. It is a new book that just came out this fall. Ooh. And it's basically like, if you like Hallmark movies, this is going to be a cute one for you. It's about Francie, whose parents, her family owns this like epic holiday themed store. It's called the Hollydale Holiday Shop. And they basically are billing it as like this little mini, you know, Christmas empire. And obviously this season is their season. But Francie's been struggling because her beloved grandfather recently passed away, and her aunt, whose name is Aunt Carol, because of course it is, Aunt Carol has been changing up a lot of things, and she doesn't like the direction that this is going in. And so she's feeling, you know, just a lot of nostalgic grief feelings about this holiday season. So she's decided that she's got to prevent her aunt from going way too far. And so she's trying to preserve like the tradition of her family's shop. But then she also has this little romance with a boy who works at the Christmas tree lot next door. Ooh. So it looks really cute. Mm-hmm. I love these types of stories. I have not read it yet, but I picked up a copy when I was at the bookstore the other day because I am just a total sucker for these types of books. So I will probably like inhale it over some weekend here coming up soon, and maybe even over Thanksgiving break, because I will be home and I just want to be cozy. And like, once, you know, the tryptophan from the turkey is like released into my system, I'm like, it is time for Christmas. So this will help get me in the mood. But that is Talk Santa to Me by Linda Urban.
Then maybe I picture that whole scenario, you standing triumphantly, it is time for Christmas.
Yes.
With the turkey drug.
Yep.
Through your blood, coursing through your blood.
Like, it makes most people sleepy, but it just makes me want to like put twinkle lights on everything.
Oh, that is so cute. That's precious. Oh, it makes people sleepy, but you put twinkle lights. Yes, it definitely makes me very sleepy. It's like Benadryl. Nature's Benadryl. but yes, so that sounds super cute. And next one I have for everyone is The Christmas Clash by Suzanne Park. And this is a rom-com that starts off with two rivals. I do like the rival trope, because I feel like it just brings that like extra spice, and it's sweeter when, you know, the climax hits and everything like that. So Chloe Kwan is not feeling Peter Lee. They've never really liked each other. Their families kind of exacerbate this little rivalry, because they don't get along either. They have rival restaurants at the mall's food court. Chloe's family are Korean, so they serve Korean food. And Lee's family, Peter Lee's family, they serve Chinese food. So it's obviously the holiday season, and Chloe is taking pictures at the mall for holidays and stuff like that. And then Peter also works at the mall, but he's working at a virtual reality experience little store or whatever. And they're working like right across the way from each other, which is interesting. And she's like, ugh, look at him and his cute face. You know how it goes. So she's like, ugh, look at him.
Oh, you're so cute. I hate it.
You're so cute. I hate it. Oh, God. So the mall is actually about to be sold, and then it's going to be torn down for condos. So instead of like presents and good cheer, their families are worrying about being evicted. So, and right before Christmas. So none of their parents knows really what to do. And soon Chloe and Peter feel like they can come together to save the mall. And of course, they're going to have to put aside their differences and their feelings mm-hmm. to work closely, very closely together. And of course, some things come out about their families, let's say, disagreements, disliking of each other, and things get sorted out, let's say. So this is I think this has a lot working for it. You have some different cultures, obviously, you're learning about, unless you belong to these cultures and it's not different for you. But for me, I don't belong to them, so it's different for me. So I feel like that is a very interesting aspect. Learning how other people, again, who are different from me, celebrate the holidays or don't or whatever. And then the rivals to lover trope, that sounds good. The holiday theme, I think the winter theme, again, makes things like cozy. And I'm realizing about myself that although I don't read a lot of contemporary romance, YA or not, honestly, I do like the addition of the winter the winter aspect or like the holiday aspect or whatever. I feel like it makes everything that much, again, cozy feeling and makes me want to just like snuggle up. And as you were talking about, Tirza, just snuggle up and be warm and read comforting things. So this one is on my list. I haven't read this one yet either, but I'm excited to. It sounds really cute. And I want to find out what the family feud is. So, like, you know, that piece of messiness in me. I'm like, what happened? So, again, that is The Christmas Clash by Suzanne Park. So, yeah. Obviously, that one is putting Christmas front as opposed to White Out, which is, like, very much just, like, kind of neutral on the holidays. But, yes, Christmas Clash by Suzanne Park.
It has all the good tropes, if you like a really tropey Christmas story, which I do. And I actually have this one checked out from the library at the moment, and I'm really excited to get to it as well. So I'm glad that you were able to talk about it.
Yay.
My next pick is a book that is called How to Excavate a Heart by Jake Maya Arlo. And it is being billed as a sapphic Jewish twist on the classic Christmas rom-com. So obviously I was in. And if you haven't had a chance to look at the cover yet, it's so adorable. It's two girls walking down a really snowy street and they're looking at each other. And then it's a corgi in little red booties walking with them. And he's like looking up at them. Like, you know, the funny look that corgi, like I am not a small dog person. I have big dogs and I love my big dogs. But if I had to have a small dog, I would have a corgi because they are adorable.
Corgis almost don't feel like small dogs. You know what I mean? Like they're kind of medium small. Like,
they're like big dog energy in a small body.
That's what it is. That's what it is. They have big dog energy. Yes, that's exactly what it is. I also am not a super big fan of small dogs. Bless their hearts, whatever. But I would get a corgi.
I would get a corgi in a heartbeat, much to my spouse's chagrin. But yes. Oh, so this book is about Shawnee, who is having a time of it. She has just been broken up with. She's been dumped by her girlfriend just days before winter break. She's supposed to be doing this really special fancy internship. I can't even say the word, so I'm not even going to because I don't want to embarrass myself.
Oh my goodness.
But it's like it's paleo something and it's the study of dead fish. So she's doing this really special internship, but she's also just like dealing with the fact that she's been dumped, and then she keeps running into this girl named May. Like literally, you know, she ran into her with a car. Dang. I mean, May was okay, but then they also, the paths keep crossing. And then it culminates in being snowed in together on Christmas Eve. So again, all the tropes. What I love about holiday books is like it's literally just like, how many tropes can we pile on here?
Honestly, because tropes are cozy. Tropes are cozy. They're comforting. They're familiar.
They are. So it is a story set over, you know, the winter holidays, set over Christmas, but it stars Jewish characters and it is about, you know, second chances and learning to love again. And I think it looks adorable. I would read it for the corgi on the cover alone. But there's a lot other things to love about it. So it's also being pitched as like for fans of Kelly Quinlan and Casey McQuiston, which if you've been listening to this podcast at all, I love Kelly Quinlan so much. So I think that comp is going to get me anyway. But yeah, How to Excavate a Heart. It looks adorable.
It does look adorable. I just looked it up. The corgi is giving a cute little look back, and it's got like a little cape on.
I know. He's like dressed up for the winter. Yeah. So cute.
It's so adorable. Oh my gosh, that cover is beautiful. I love it. Yes. Next one I have is New Year's Kiss by Lee Matthews, and this is about a girl who has like New Year's resolution, and she's spending the week after Christmas at a snowy lodge in Vermont, and she's not really feeling it. but it's owned by her grandmother. And her grandmother, I mean, the reason they're not really feeling it could possibly be because her grandmother is not, like, the warmest person. So now they suddenly have to live at her lodge for a minute. So they're not really super excited about that. And also, there is this guy, Christopher, that shows up. And suddenly, maybe the lodge visit isn't so bad. You know, suddenly, miraculously. So she, Tess, she's like, okay, I want to come out of my shell, part of her New Year's resolution. And she creates this list of things that she wants to do before the new year comes in. A couple of those things are singing in public. I mean, I guess, sis, if that's what you wanted, I'm like, that's a heck of a list item. She wants to ski and all that good stuff. So Christopher obviously is welcome to help is not the word I was looking for. He's anxious to help. He is all for helping her. And hopefully he is on the list. So, of course, as they're trying to help her complete her list items, they grow close. Who knows if they will bring in the new year together or not. Obviously, it's a romance, so we already know. But the journey is cute. I like the isolation of the winter resort. That also is kind of cozy to me. I don't know if I'm just like, oh, I need a vacation. I'm living vicariously through this character. But I like that idea too. Again, that the theme of the show is like just cozy winter reads, cozy holiday winter reads. This also reminds me though too, it's not a YA book, but the Talia Hibbert Brown Sisters series, the first book. Mm-hmm. Just the aspect of the bucket list and romance and stuff. I imagine Talia Hibbert's not the only person to write about that, but that's the book that immediately comes to mind when I read about this book. That is also on my list. So I think it sounds fun. I think it will be another great comfort winter read. Obviously, this takes place a little after Christmas and more towards New Year's, but still, I think it'll be fun. And it, again, is New Year's Kiss by Lee Matthews.
Yeah, and I like that there's, you know, some books that are set around New Year's because yeah. New Year's, you know, is kind of like the afterthought, but still really important to mm-hmm. this time of year. And people do a lot of fun New Year's celebrations.
Exactly.
So my next pick, which is, again, I'm sorry, not a book that I have read yet, but it is on my list for this season. It is Eight Nights of Flirting by Hannah Reynolds, and it is totally, obviously, from the title is all about Hanukkah, and so it's about Shira, who this Hanukkah, she really wants to get a boyfriend. She wants to woo this boy that she knows, Isaac, because she thinks he's hot. She thinks he's really smart. He works for her great uncle, so she knows that he's, you know, dependable and trustworthy, but she has no idea how to flirt. And so she ends up connecting with her nemesis, who used to be somebody that she has a crush on, but no more. Or does she? And she knows that he's very charming and he's very popular and he's very easy to talk to. So she's like, okay, if somebody's going to teach me how to flirt and how to woo somebody, it's going to be Tyler. And so they get snowed in together and they have to strike this deal where she's going to get flirting lessons and then she'll help him out with his career in return. But of course, fake flirting leads to catching actual feelings, and that leads to complications. So this looks really sweet. I'm really excited to read it. And also the cover is very cute. It has this couple that, like, laying in the snow, and it's very bright, and the eyes in the cover title treatment are little candles, which I think is really cute. So yeah, that's Eight Nights of Flirting by Hannah Reynolds.
Yay! That sounds fun.
That's, oh my gosh, we've gone through our books. I guess I will do another quick shout out because this is not exactly, like, it's a new book, but not really, like, new content. Mm-hmm. But Rainbow Rowell, who wrote Fangirl and the Simon Snow books, she has actually just released her first collection of short stories. And the book is called Scattered Showers. And the reason I'm bringing this up is, even though this is not like being billed as like a collection of holiday stories, most of the stories in here are holiday stories or they're winter stories.
Right. I wonder why they wouldn't. What they wouldn't say.
Well, so here's the deal with Rainbow Rowell's short stories. Over the years, she's written quite a few short stories, a lot of them set sort of around the holiday season, but they were short stories that weren't really widely released. So like Midnights, which is a short story about New Year's Eve, and it's the first short story in this collection. That one was, I think, released as like an exclusive for the UK's World Book Day. And so it wasn't really ever available here in the US. I bought a copy from, I had a copy somewhere and I remember reading it and really enjoying it. I think I also like bought a UK edition that had Kindred Spirits, which is about waiting in line for Star Wars movies at the holidays, which, you know, we've kind of moved past this like brief era, but there was a brief era in which Star Wars movies always came out in December. So,
oh yeah, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. And then she just had a new short story released last winter, and it was an Audible exclusive, so it wasn't really available in print before now, but it's actually about Reagan from Fangirl and her holidays during the pandemic. She's also has two other short stories in here that I think have never been released. One is called Snow for Christmas, which I think is a Simon Snow story. And one is called The Snowball. And then there's another story called Winter Songs for Summer. So clearly, if you want, you know, something to be very winter friendly, holiday friendly, this is a really great book to pick up. And now that I'm thinking about it, I think I switched that around. Midnights was originally published in an anthology of Christmas stories, My True Love Gave to Me by Stephanie Perkins, which came out like almost 10 years ago. And Kindred Spirits was, I think, the UK World Book Day thing. So if you somehow missed all of these or you just want to read all of her short stories in one collection, I recommend picking up Scattered Showers. It also makes a really great gift because the hardcover edition is gorgeous. There's really beautiful interior illustrations. This has blue sprayed edges. It comes with a ribbon bookmarker. Like, if as far as like gift books go, Scattered Showers is lovely. So that's my little pitch.
That was a heck of a pitch too. Is it the one with like the clouds and rainbow? And
yeah.
That's super cute. I'm going to gift that. You said sprayed edges? I'm going to give that to myself. Like,
yes, gift it to your friends or to yourself. I saw a copy at my local library and I picked it up and I was like, I'm going to read this and I don't need to buy it because I got it from the library. And then I like the more I looked at it and I opened it up and I saw the illustrations on the inside and I was like, nope, I'm buying a copy for myself. This is going on my shelf.
That's the thing, like working in the book industry. I love being able to get like advanced reader copies and people send me books and stuff, but I'm like, sometimes I just need, because a lot of them I read like digitally just for, you know, the environment and space and everything, but sometimes I'm like, I'm gonna have to buy a physical copy of that.
I need that. So
yeah,
and holidays, treat yourself.
Exactly. And this one too is cool because I like short stories. You can like pick them up and put them down as you're doing holiday things. You can get a nice contained story and then go about your business, socializing with family or friends or whomever you spend the holidays with. So I really like how that one sounds.
So that's, I believe, our show for today. We hope that whatever you celebrate, that you get to celebrate with books. That's my pithy ending here. But thank you so much for tuning in this week. You can always leave us a feedback about the show on Apple Podcasts to let us know how we're doing and to help others find us. You can email us at heyya@bookriot.com. We love feedback. We love listener requests. And don't forget to visit bookriot.com for newsletters, podcasts, and all things bookish. Thanks again to today's sponsors for making the show possible. And thanks to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink. You can follow me, I usually say on Twitter and Instagram, but I'm not sure how much longer Twitter is going to be.
Twitter is disintegrating.
Twitter is currently self-imploding. I did not delete my account, but I was like, maybe I should log in and take one final look around before everything blows up. But I will remain on Instagram. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm at Tears of Price. And oh, Erica, what about you? What are you going to do?
That was such, you said that perfectly. Yes. What are you like? Oh, you poor thing.
Will you even exist if Twitter goes away? Like
I will cease to exist. My only social media presence that I share, because you know, obviously I have some lurker accounts. Obviously. Yeah, but I'm on Twitter. Erica_EZE_. And I'm honestly like, we all know the fragile state of Twitter. So I will start sharing probably a new social handle with y'all soon. That's not Twitter. So
once we get the lay of the land, I mean, who knows? By the time this airs, Twitter could be like completely down. Completely, we don't even know.
Yeah, like the Elmo gif with I don't know what gender Elmo is. When Elmo has Elmo's hands up and there are flames all around.
That's the vibe that Twitter is presenting at the moment.
Definitely. Oh my God.
But anyway, on that note, we will talk to you again in 2 weeks. In the meantime, happy reading.
Happy reading.